Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
It's just money.
Blasphemy! This is madness!
I drink your milkshake!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. We welcome you all to the show, especially newcomers. If you're new and you don't know what a milkshake, dollar milkshake theory is, or what a milkshake podcast is, we have a great playlist at the top of our YouTube channel that says Start Here. We walk you through many of the concepts that we get deeper into on this show in that playlist. So we encourage you to start there. And you'll notice throughout the entire YouTube channel homepage, we have a number of playlists and various segments because that's how we like to approach this channel, sharing content in a very specific topical manner. Every single episode is not just the same thing, two guys bantering about markets. There's specific objectives. But this is our full-length episode, one of our fan favorites, and it will be two guys bantering about markets. My name is John Katsumita. This is my friend Brent Johnson, the man behind the Dollar Milkshake Theory. And Brent, it's funny how fast the days go, how quick weeks pass. You almost have to stop and look back and recall and remember that the Fed just made a rate policy decision. What do you think about the decision and some of the reactions from the market?
Well, it turned out to be quite a week, to be honest. You know, we went into the week knowing it was going to be a big week with the Fed meeting. You know, I over the last couple of weeks, or actually since July, I've been pretty steadfast in my belief that they were going to hike at this meeting. The larger message with a hike was that my belief that they would remain hawkish longer than the kind of the market was expecting them to. Going into the meeting, you know, I think 90%, 98% of people polled expect them to pause. And they did. And so I was amongst the two who thought that they would hike. So I got it wrong on what they would do. The interesting thing is that the reaction to the pause kind of had the same effect of what a hike might have done, or had the same effect of what I believed the message would be, which was that they were going to be more hawkish than expected and probably stay higher for longer, or until some kind of market event forces their hand. And what was really interesting was a couple days before the Fed meeting, I sent out a poll on Twitter and I just said, what would equities like more? Would they prefer a hawkish pause or would they prefer a dovish hike? And most people, it wasn't a huge victory. I think it was like 55-45 or maybe 60-40 that said a dovish hike would probably be the preferred thing. And it kind of makes sense because if you have another hike, and one of the things I said last week was that if they hike another 25 basis points, it doesn't really make that big of a difference in the overall scheme of things, another 25 basis points. But the larger signal that the rate hikes are now behind us and we probably won't have any more would, I thought, be seen as dovish, and markets would probably like that. What we got instead was the dovish pause. And to be honest, we got the hawkish pause, but not only did we get a hawkish pause, it couldn't have been much more hawkish without also having a rate hike in it. And what I mean by that is they not only said we're still open to doing another rate hike this year, and that in itself has consequences, the fact that they kicked it down the road. Again, if you do the hike, it's kind of behind you, and everything that comes, you know, down the pike after that is perhaps not looked at or had as much angst over because the hike is already done. But now the fact that they haven't hiked, but they said they still expect to hike again before the year's over, now every data point that comes out, every economic indicator, everything that people, market participants look at has to be viewed with a little bit extra caution or a little bit extra interest. Because now we're still trying to glean, what is the Fed going to do? Again, the decision is in front of us, not behind us. The second reason that it turned out to be more hawkish than expected was what they said for expectations for next year. Now, previously in July, they had said, you know, they expected to hike one or more times this year, but that they also expected to start cutting rates next year. And that is part of the reason that the market kind of viewed, the previous Fed meeting as kind of a license to go ahead and, you know, continue to rally, because markets are forward looking. Markets anticipate what's going to happen. And it, because they were forecasting rate cuts next year, not only rate cuts, but several rate cuts next year, the market kind of looked past the expected or potential hike and started to immediately focus on the future cuts. Well, what they've done now is they've said, well, no, hold on, slow down. The hikes are still ahead of us. And not only are the hikes still ahead of us, but we're not planning on cutting as much as we previously were expecting to cut. And so markets kind of took that, you know, over the next couple of days, and, you know, we had another sell-off in the market, and now the market is kind of where it was back in July again. Actually, it's basically where it was in June. And I know I'm kind of rambling here, but I want to make this point before I forget. Oftentimes this year, we have highlighted the violently sideways nature of this year's market. Yep, markets are up. But if you took out January and May from this year, I think the market would be basically flat to down. Markets had a very good January and then went sideways February, March, and kind of into April. Had a very good May into the middle of June. And then it's gone sideways from the middle of June until now. And I think it's now is a little bit, maybe 2 to 3% lower than it was in the middle of June. So again, if you were on the sidelines for either January or May of this year, you haven't made any money. Other than those 2 months, we've really had this violently sideways market action. And, you know, markets don't like uncertainty. And the Fed kicking another rate hike decision down the road, and indicating that not only are we kicking the rate hikes down the road, but the cuts that we had previously told you we were expecting, we no longer expect them, led to more violence, economic violence or market violence towards the end of last week. And markets sold off fairly heavily the last couple of days. And they started out good on Friday, but ended the day red. So I think next week's going to be very interesting. I would expect a little bit more, volatility to rise, and probably a little bit further downside in the markets. But that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, it was a great response. You know, as you were kind of talking, little questions would pop up in my head, and then you would, you know, in some form or another, address them. We've highlighted consistently, because it's just a nature of the markets these days, the fact that the market overall leans so heavily on what the Fed bankers are saying, whether directly in press conferences or in Fed minutes, this jawbone effect that they have on driving markets up or down is something we've highlighted in specific episodes, along with the thing you just mentioned, violently sideways. We've explained the terms dovish and hawkish in a previous midweek update called When Doves Cry. So if that's somewhat of an unfamiliar term, you can definitely refer to that video to get a little bit more clarity on that. But I can't help but visualize, you know, the jawboning game that they play, and this like dance between, oh, we'll hike, but we'll be hawkish in the verbiage, and you know, these like really subtle differences that they need to decide going into the announcement. I visualize like the bankers sitting around a round table, and someone says, what if we do this and then say this? And then it's like they high five each other like, yeah, Jerome, good idea, that one's clever. So it feels so much of this like combination of, oh, okay, well, let's pause, but let's say these exact type of words to kind of spook the market and throw them off guard. And they're almost playing this poker game with themselves, trying to decide what kind of impact they can leave on markets. So it's very interesting in that one of the questions I was going to propose that you kind of explained is, well, if they're going to pause and then be hawkish about it, what's hawkish about it that would throw the markets off guard? And the main thing you highlighted was the fact that there might be another rate hike down the road, and that, you know, this isn't the pause that leads to a future rate cut.
That's right. And, you know, the further thing that kind of plays into this, and we've highlighted this a couple times over the last few weeks, especially as the dollar has remained strong. You know, it was 2 weeks ago, John, that we said, you know, the dollar had risen 8 weeks in a row. It was probably a decent time for a pause. And it has kind of paused, but it hasn't pulled back. And in fact, it's been, I think, even slightly positive the last couple of weeks. And the reason we said that that could happen was not just because of the Fed itself, but because of what's happening around the world. You know, last week we had, after the Fed, we had a Bank of England meeting. And, you know, part of the reason that the dollar has had fallen for, you know, from a year ago, kind of November of last year into July of this year, was the expectation that the Fed would start to cut, or that the Fed would stop hiking and start to cut. That's now been extended based on what we've just talked about. But also, but the reason we said that that might not happen was because but it was also expected that the rest of the world would continue to hike. But what we've highlighted here is that a couple times, the rest of the world is not doing as great as may be otherwise be perceived. And we weren't sure that they would be able to continue their rate hikes. So markets, the dollar sold off over much of the last year into July on the expectation that rate hikes would stop in the US, but they would continue overseas. But again, what's happened now or just over the last month to 2 months is that the expectations for further hikes in the US have remained, and the expectation for further hikes around the world have started to come down. The ECB paused, and now, like last week, the Bank of England paused. And so, and you know, the Bank of Japan, they can't decide what they're going to do. They're in the process of killing both their bond market and their currency market. Japan or China has tried so many stimulus plans this year. You know, the yuan has fallen precipitously. So we've gotten this situation where, you know, the dollar kind of bottomed in July. It's been up 10 weeks in a row. And, you know, the rest of the world is starting to say no moss on rate hikes. And the Fed is saying, you know what, we may still have more work to do. And that's leading to this uncertainty in the markets here in the U.S. And it's leading to further pressure based on a stronger dollar around the world. So, you know, all of this kind of leads into what I've kind of held as my, I don't know, base case, for lack of a better way of saying it all year, is that I think that there's more pain to come kind of in the short to medium term. I don't think we're going into one of these 4 or 5 year, you know, recession / depressions where everything just collapses. But I do think that markets need to experience more pain before the Fed suddenly shifts to a more dovish posture and goes back to some kind of a QE or money printing scenario. And as a result, I expect markets to have another, when I say markets, basically I'm saying, you know, global risk markets or equity markets probably need to have another correction before another large move higher. And, you know, it kind of seems like it's playing out that way to me, but, you know, Q4 is going to be pretty interesting. We're kind of, it's interesting that, you know, a year ago at this time, the end of September was kind of the lows for the markets. Now we're having a little bit of sell-off here again. You know, markets tend to have these crazy events in the fall. Whether we get that this year or not, we'll see. But it's kind of setting up to have some excitement.
Excellent. So we've tried to be very clear that neither one of us are fans of central banks and or central bankers. Just recently, we published a video for a somewhat new segment called WWJD, What Would Johnson Do? And we proposed the question to you about what if you were given the power to control the monetary system? What if you were appointed chairman of the Federal Reserve? And we kind of went down that rabbit hole. I encourage people to watch that. And, you know, I think you articulated well where the problems overall in the system are as far as giving, you know, so much power and control to 12 PhDs. But at the same time, you know, as I highlight that, we also have to accept the reality in which we live, and that is monetary policies are run by 12 PhDs. And if you look at what their objectives were once they realized they got the transitory piece incredibly wrong, and that they were going to go on an aggressive rate hiking cycle, they've been able to pull off quite a bit that no one expected that they could. So one of the things that's, I think, kind of almost become part of finance culture since 2009 in the great financial crisis back then, all the way through even the sell-off we saw in 2020, is this notion or idea that bad news ultimately is good news for markets because it means a rescue is right around the corner. And for so much of the initial rate hiking cycle, and almost immediately it felt like the yield curves went inverted, and that has a, you know, a great track record of predicting recessions. Rate hiking cycles in general typically end up breaking something and leading to some kind of chaos or crisis, whatever that may be or how big that might be. So markets immediately started taking any kind of rate hike or any kind of like impact of those rate hikes almost as positive. And I know I'm kind of being winded here, but I want to highlight all these things that we've addressed throughout the year. Even just recently, you've pointed out that during rate hiking cycles, how well equities perform. So we've kind of had the unexpected result, although historically the normal result, which is Fed hikes, equities do well. Market anticipates that the Fed's going to cut, therefore continues to do well, or at least animal spirits continue to thrive. Do you feel like the Fed is starting to win the later rounds of this boxing match, that we're in round 8, 9, 10 of the fight, and the animal spirits are starting to just finally give up, and that's partly what you're seeing in this sell-off?
Well, I think that's potentially the case. And here's the thing where this kind of gets interesting, because again, part of the reason that I was saying that I expected them to be hawkish a little bit longer than the market was saying, I thought it would take the form of a rate hike rather than the dovish pause, or I'm sorry, the hawkish pause. But part of the argument was we were playing the man, right? We're playing Powell and Powell's legacy. And I didn't think that Powell could pivot quite as easily as many other market participants thought, because I thought it had the potential to hurt his legacy if he were to start to ease, go dovish, and then for whatever reason, inflation either stays high or God forbid, reaccelerates. And as a result, I didn't think he would be as quick to switch. And so that's kind of where we're at now. And it's also why I think, going to your point of, you know, oftentimes as you get near the end of a rate hiking cycle, you know, bad news starts to become good news, because if things are getting bad, the Fed is going to have to stop hiking. They're going to have to move to an easy posture, and that will be good for markets. However, with this hawkish pause, I'm not sure that's the case, because, you know, they've said, you know, the rate hike is out in front of us still. Another rate hike is still out in front of us, and we no longer expect to be cutting as quickly as we previously did. And this also goes back, now combine that with my, you know, playing the man, whereas I think Powell, for his own legacy, needs to stay hawkish longer than people would otherwise like. I don't think he minds causing economic pain. I don't think he minds causing a recession. We've talked about how when he started, I think his whole goal was to cause a recession, because in my mind, that was his way of controlling inflation and their arrogance that they can just turn around and reverse things and save the system if they break it. But now, you know, on his conference call, or I'm sorry, his press conference afterwards the other day, you know, someone asked him if he still expected a soft landing, and he said, well, you know, his basically comment was, it doesn't have to be a soft landing, and, you know, I've always thought that was possible, but no, it doesn't have to be a soft landing. And so, you know, again, I don't think economic pain or market volatility is something that's going to automatically make him go out and just switch to being dovish. And so, as people come to terms with this, as market participants come to terms with this, and if data comes in that's bad, but yet the Fed is not yet willing to switch, all of a sudden bad data can become bad data, you know? And then if the Fed is not riding into the rescue as quickly as the market would like them to, then, you know, the market kind of has to survive on its own for a while. Now, I think everybody knows we can't go to totally free markets. If they were to just go to free markets and the Fed were to stop intervening, we would have incredible volatility and things would not end well for anybody. So of course the Fed will come in and act. That is the whole reason central banks exist in the first place. So I'm not going to say here and say that he's trying to bring on a Great Depression and he's going to keep hiking rates no matter what happens. My point is that I don't think that he minds causing some volatility and some pain. Now, will he go too far and will he cause a disaster? Very possibly. But that doesn't mean that he's going to do it right. Doesn't mean he's going to switch right away. And so I think there is I believe there's a greater chance of downside before they react than I think the market is currently pricing in. And so therefore, that's why I think bad news could potentially be bad news as we enter Q4 here.
Now that's the madness. Finally, the markets are returning to bad news being bad news. What a silly concept that is. You know, it's the press conference, the way Powell addressed that conversation, it kind of goes back to that visualization I have, you know, him walking backstage afterwards and fist pumping his buddies like, oh, did you hear that answer to that question? It's still such a funny thing when you consider the fact that, you know, like you're saying, there's only a certain amount of volatility that he and his comrades will be able to tolerate. Only the vigilante central banker, Brent Johnson, would be willing to usher in a great reset. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, I want to add on top of this, because you mentioned volatility, is have you seen any kind of indication from the put call ratio or any of these other types of positioning mechanisms that might signal where the market, in addition to maybe a short sell off, is trying to, you know, what kind of cards they're trying to play going forward? And we've also talked about at various times, and this has been a big talking point for everybody in the financial markets, is that with the Fed continually raising and doing so as aggressively as they've had, they've caused a lot of pain in the banking system, particularly for smaller regional banks, as you've had this massive outflow of deposits into whether it be money market funds or just government bonds in general. Do you still see some of that as a potential bad news is bad news? Or do you think this pause kind of gives some of that financial sector a chance to breathe?
No, you know, I don't think it necessarily gives the financial sector a chance to breathe, because with U.S. rates, specifically U.S. Treasury rates, short-term U.S. Treasury rates, not only potentially going higher, but the fact that they're not expected to come down as soon as they previously were expected to come down, to me, that signals there may be even more reason for, you know, deposit holders to leave the money market funds sitting in bank balance sheets and go into brokerage accounts and buy T-bills. So again, in a way, you kind of have the government, you know, competing with banks for deposits. And, you know, I think we all know that the government doesn't like competition, especially when it comes to money. And so, you know, I think this not only has the potential to not make things easier for the banks, but it has the potential to make things even harder for the banks than they otherwise were.
Yeah, well, the numbers on the BTFP are pretty staggering. There's, I think, $108 billion of usage from that, you know, somewhat federal bank bailout program. And it's more or less been a flat line sideways. So it doesn't, certainly I wouldn't expect a pause to bring immediate relief where people are, or banks are, you know, returning those funds and going back to a more healthy balance sheet. But, you know, it's there. It's another one of those indicators that there's some pain going on in the market. And whether it's the stock market, equity prices, or housing market, you know, the Fed has been very clear, and I think you've articulated well previously in other conversations we've had, that the Fed wants to bring down asset prices, and that ultimately by doing that, you can slow credit growth, you can slow the economy. And one of the impacts of all of those things, including rate hikes, is that you eventually start to see weakness in the employment sector. Now, we did, I guess, a week or two ago, there's a big bankruptcy filing from the hauling company Yellow. And now you have this UAW, the United Automakers Workers Union, go into a major strike. Do you think that Do you have any comments, I guess, just on the overall health of the employment sector that hasn't really been the trigger that a lot of people thought would be? And does a huge strike like this not only lead to further issues in the economy, but, you know, ultimately a contraction in GDP that maybe kicks off further unemployment and the start of a recession?
Well, I think that's probably the right way to say it. Like, the reality is, despite many people's expectations, like, employment is in pretty good shape right now, right? And the economy is in pretty good shape right now. The question is, where is it 3 months, 6 months, a year from now? And the things like, you know, the potential strike, the UAW strike, you know, other things like the U.S. government shutting down, all these, this leads to the possibility that things get bad very quickly, right? So I'm not so worried about it right now. Part of the reason why I've expected the Fed to remain hawkish longer than, you know, most expectations is because the economy is in pretty good shape. But I'm highly cognizant that there are a number of factors, you know, some of them which you have just highlighted, and the fact that, you know, just based on the design of the system, and I know we've talked about this several times, when you live in a debt-based monetary system, things can turn extremely quickly, especially when you have things like we just highlighted with the bank deposits potentially leaving banks and moving into treasuries, and that deprives the banks of capital. When you have things like these, the strike, which could dramatically impact, you know, a big sector of the economy, that can change things very quickly. And once the ball starts rolling in one direction, the structure of the market, which we've talked about several times, with the passive structure of the market, where there's not a whole lot of thinking that goes into a decision. It's just, if you need cash, you sell. And if you have cash, you buy. It can lead to a very quick escalation of what would otherwise be a fairly benign problem. And I think that's probably the biggest thing for me, and the biggest challenge I have had personally managing through the last several years, is the understanding that thing, based on the design of the system, the change in market structure due to the rise of passive, and the extent of the debts that we have around the world, that you're really only one landmine away from having a big disaster. And you have to manage money with the knowledge that can happen very quickly, but that also, if you don't hit that landmine, things can stay okay for a long time. It's kind of like running through a field full of landmines. As long as you don't hit the mine, you're fine, right? And if you start running and nobody else does, you're way ahead of them. The problem is when you hit that mine, it's all for naught, because you literally blow up, right? And maybe that's kind of a silly analogy, but that is kind of how I feel. I kind of feel like we're in this environment where, you know, while the sun's shining, it's like that famous saying from the guy from Merrill Lynch back in 2008, you know, as long as the music's playing, you got to get up and dance. You know, I always thought that was kind of a stupid quote, and I don't think you'd get up and dance necessarily, but you can't just sit there either. Right. And so I think you're kind of, for me anyway, like, I'm making my way through this field, but I'm looking every time I put my foot down, because I'm cognizantly aware that there's a number of landmines out there. Makes it very difficult. Makes it interesting. Makes it fun, but it makes it very difficult.
Well, the Minsky moment is kind of known as the longer you go without something happening, the greater the probability of something significant happening. Using your landmine analogy, it feels the opposite to some extent, where the markets are been running through this field for so long that, like, well, hey, maybe this isn't a landmine field. So we'll see. Look, the simple news clip or headline of the Fed decides to pause doesn't really tell you a whole lot, and it certainly doesn't give you perspectives like we've just discussed. But I'm glad that we focused on that specifically in this episode, because although it was somewhat of a forecasted move, the things that they said to justify that pause and or potential future rate hikes definitely had an impact on markets. And I don't think, as we've discussed here, that impact is yet over. So before we wrap up, this full-length episode. Is there anything else that you want to address specific maybe to the topic we covered here with the Fed or anything else that you saw go on this week?
I think the main thing, and I'll take this all the way back to the very beginning of the episode where we started, and that was, what is the Fed going to do, and what did the market think the Fed was going to do? What did I think the Fed was going to do? It's not so important what the Fed actually does. It's more important, and I don't necessarily mind that I got it wrong, because I didn't change my whole portfolio based on what the Fed was going to do or what the Fed was not going to do. It's more about being prepared for the different outcomes. At the end of the day, managing money is kind of being in the world prediction business. And anybody who's arrogant enough to think that they can perfectly predict the future probably shouldn't be doing anything other than just spending the day by themselves. I certainly don't think I can predict the future with perfect accuracy. So the fact that I got the decision on the Fed wrong did not affect the fact that our portfolios were positioned in a way that weren't hurt by the volatility that has happened since then. And I think that's a good way for other people to think about markets as well. Unfortunately, I don't think that we live in a world where you can just ignore the Fed. I know there are some people out there that say, you know, these guys are clowns. It doesn't matter what they do. Don't pay attention to them. Turn off the TV. I understand that. And if you have a very long time horizon, if you're not managing money for other people, you don't have to mark your book to market every month or every quarter or whatever it is. That's certainly fine. But if you are managing capital for other people, and you are trying to, you know, achieve their objectives as well as your own, you can't really ignore the biggest player in the game. And the biggest player in the game is the Fed. I mean, that is just a fact of life. You might not like it. You might wish it was different, but that's a fact of life. So I don't think you can ignore them, but it also doesn't mean that you have to change your portfolio constantly every time they say something. I think the most important thing is to have your portfolio positioned in a way that you're going to be okay no matter what happens. And if you're going to make a bet on what they're doing, make a bet with a small percent of your portfolio. Don't make a bet with the entire percent of your portfolio. And I think if you do those things, it'll make these events and these press conferences and these Fed decisions and all this madness a little bit easier to tolerate. And, you know, your emotions won't be, dependent upon what some PhD in Washington, D.C. says.
Well, I would say based on some of the commentary that we see on the YouTube channel and certainly what you experience on Twitter would suggest that there's a lot of people out there working for World Predictions LLC and a lot of those people spending way too much time by themselves. So, Brent, yeah. I appreciate all the color that you've added to what many might see as a really overly general event this week with the Fed making a rate decision that everyone kind of predicted. It was definitely valuable not only to get your take on it, but where you kind of see this potentially impacting the markets in the near term. So everyone, we appreciate you joining us. If you want to follow Brent on Twitter, you can do that using his handle SantiagoAUFund. You can follow me at John Kutzmita. Our YouTube channel and everywhere else that we interact from this show uses the handle MilkshakesPod. And you can also find a little bit more information and perhaps scroll through the list of videos chronologically using our website at milkshakespod.com. That'll do it for us on the full-length episode. Join us in about a day for the Monday peak of the week. We will talk about the week ahead and some of the things that we're focused on, specifically not just a rundown of the calendar. We'll also have a Madness edition coming out in the beginning of the week where we get a little outside of the market-related topics. Although I think there are some maddening things related to topics that we'll dive into this week. And then we'll certainly share a clip with you from a recent episode, which we think will support some of the conversations that are going on. And that'll bring us to the end of the week, where hopefully we'll be able to share with you another episode of WWJD. So that'll do it for now. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you in a day. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.